Chapter 12 Group Behavior and Related Ideas. The definition of a group and related ideas question, what is a group? This term is defined in Taylor's social psychology as group, a social aggregate in which members are interdependent, have mutual influence on each other, and have at least the potential for mutual interaction. For the model I am presenting, I will use a more general definition than most social psychologists would use. However, I will discuss a concept that is similar to the one presented in Taylor's social psychology, which is a face-to-face group. In my model, a face-to-face group is only one category of group. However, when most social psychologists talk about groups, they are generally talking about face-to-face groups, where people have more or less equal opportunity to influence and interact with each other. These are the types of groups that can easily be created for experimental purposes, and they often range in size from 2 to 20. As the number of people increases in such groups, the nature of the group tends to change to a social structure that is different from a face-to-face group. For example, 10 people working together in a small office may constitute a face-to-face group, but several thousand people working in the same organization would not constitute such a group. In a face-to-face group, people can get to know each other as individuals, and can talk to each other in a direct way, which is generally not feasible in an organization comprised of several thousand people. Examples of face-to-face groups are the family, the students in a classroom, a couple, a jury, a discussion group, two people working together on a project, etc. For the general model of groups I am presenting in this text, the definition of groups is more general than the definition presented in most social psychology books, and is as follows. A group is an aggregate of people who interact with each other directly and or indirectly, with some degree of cooperation and awareness of a social structure that relates to the aggregate of people. The interactions can involve one or more of the following verbal, nonverbal or written communications, as well as shared or cooperative behavioral interactions. The communications and interactions may or may not influence some or all of the group members. The awareness of a social structure can include one or more of the following: an awareness of the identity of the group, its basic norms, values, goals, how to participate in it, and how to access the group physically or electronically. Some modern groups are only accessed electronically, which is familiar to people who communicate over the internet. Thus, according to the above general definition, all of the following are groups: two or more people bonded in friendship, the family, the students in a specific class, a jury, all the people in the workplace, the people that work in a corporation, an organization, the students and faculty in a university, the government, the military, the police force. Thus, groups can range in size from two people to millions, such as the military with this more general definition. Note the last six examples with a sign would not be classified as groups with a more conventional social psychological definition of groups. In addition, the fifth example, all the people in the workplace, would only be classified as a group with the more conventional definitions if the number of people were small enough in number, thus permitting face-to-face interaction. Question: why do human beings interact in groups? There are many reasons for this, which include the following. It is easier to complete certain tasks when working in a group. The superior skills of some members can compensate for skill deficiencies in some of the group members. Related to this idea is the concept of specialization. By working in groups, it is highly functional to have certain individuals specialize and/or become experts in certain areas, which can involve specific skills or knowledge. Working in groups is usually safer, because if a hazardous condition or accident occurs, there is the power of all or most of the members to deal with the problem. It is often more effective to learn in a group situation. This makes it quite possible for one person to learn from another. It can often be quite satisfying to work and play in groups. We learn from childhood that interaction with others can be rewarding, which may result in a desire to interact in groups. Most individuals could not survive without the complex system of groups that exist in a civilized society. However, groups are so essential for survival that even uncivilized societies have group structures. Question: are there genetic factors that predispose human beings to a group structure? The answer is there are no inborn instincts that make human beings join groups. However, there are genetic limitations, such as lack of basic survival instincts, that make it necessary for human beings to be part of a group. Human beings are born into a group, which we call the family. If the infant is rejected from this group, without a substitute family, it will quickly die. This is not the case with animals that are born with effective survival instincts, such as fish, amphibians and reptiles. Thus, groups are so important for human beings, all societies and their cultures facilitate group structures. What factors are primary to a group? The following six factors are present in most, if not all, groups. If one or more of these factors are missing in a group, it may not be a true group according to the definition and model that I am delineating in this text. The factors are as follows. People that interact in the group. This is obvious. Without group members, there is certainly no group. However, an important idea can be added here, which is that people must know how to interact in the group. Thus, new members must be socialized into the group. That is, they must be taught all of the following: their roles within the group, the norms, values, beliefs, goals, and many other ideas that relate to the group. In simple groups, most people more or less already know how to interact. In more complicated groups, it can take quite a while to learn all the information needed to be a fully functional member. A space where the people meet. There are groups that rent or own their own rooms, buildings, and land. However, there are some groups, such as most friendship groups, which do not have a regular physical meeting space. Such groups may meet in various physical facilities throughout town, such as on the street, in school, in the park, in someone's house, etc. In modern times, computer groups developed, which involve communications through the internet. The space that such groups use is electronic in nature. Rules. Most groups have a set of formal and or informal rules. Formal rules are generally the written rules of the group. Some groups just have informal rules, which are not written, such as is found in friendship groups. It is not uncommon for the formal rules of a group to be contradicted by the informal rules of the group. For example, in a work environment, the written rules may require all maintenance personnel to remain on the job until official quitting time. However, the informal rules may allow the maintenance workers to leave as soon as the day's work is completed. Values. Most, if not all, groups have values. Values, as the term is used here, means the relative importance that is placed on certain entities, actions, or achievements. For example, a highly competitive college places much value on excellent academic achievement. The same college may place a much lower value on social popularity, and it may place a highly negative value on the use of recreational drugs. Thus, values can be positive or negative. It is important to understand that the values of a group can only be understood in terms of comparing its values with other values. For example, if you evaluate the opinion of most group members, regardless of the group they are in, they will place a high value on education. However, if you evaluate the relative importance of education versus a job after high school, you will find a difference between groups. Some will say that a college education is much more important than a job after high school. Others would say that if you have a reasonably good job after completing high school, why would you want to invest time and money going to college? Goals. Most, if not all, groups have formal and or informal goals. There are often collective group goals, such as a corporation trying to make a large profit. However, there are also goals of the group members. That is, people join groups because of personal goals. For example, an individual may become part of the workforce of a corporation to earn a living, to advance in a specific career-related field, etc. Many simple groups do not have specifically defined goals, such as most friendship groups. However, this does not mean that no goals are involved. There are unstated or undefined goals involved, which can be having fun, preventing loneliness, meeting new people through friends, etc. The reward structure. This is a relatively complicated component, which will require four detailed paragraphs to explain. Question: What does the phrase reward structure mean? In this text, it is defined as a structure of rewards and penalties that influence the behavior of the members of the group. This can be described more precisely as follows. Groups have ways of rewarding its members for proper behavior and achievements that are valued by the group. Groups also have ways of penalizing its members for certain failures and behaviors. The rewards and penalties provided by the group can be formal and/or informal. These rewards and penalties usually affect each member of the group, including the leader. However, the rewards and penalties are not necessarily the same for each individual in the group. That is, the reward structure that applies to an individual usually depends on his or her role and/or status in the group. For example, employees in a small business will generally receive rewards and penalties from the boss and other workers. The boss can praise the workers and/or give them a raise. The boss can also penalize his workers by criticizing them in a hostile way, by reducing their salary or firing them. Employees also may reward each other, which is usually in an informal way, such as by being helpful and kind to fellow workers. The employees may also penalize other workers, such as for breaking informal rules, with hostile remarks, social ostracism, or informing the boss about misbehavior of the worker. The boss may also receive rewards and penalties from his employees and customers. If the boss is kind and fair to the employees and customers, he or she may be well liked and the employees and customers will be loyal to the firm. Loyal customers will result in more money for the boss. The employees can further reward the boss by working hard, by not quitting, by treating the customers in such a way that they continue to do business with the firm. Thus, there is a structure where everyone involved can more or less reward or penalize a member to some degree, which can serve as a mechanism to control or influence the behavior of all the group members. That is, in the above example, the boss can control or influence the behavior of the employees and the employees can control or influence the boss to a certain degree. In addition, the employees can also control or influence each other. That is, all the members of the group can more or less control or influence each other by a series of formal and/or informal rewards and penalties. The difference between formal and informal rewards and penalties are explained in the next paragraph with a series of examples. Formal rewards and penalties are generally part of the written rules of the group. The plus sign in all the following examples indicate a reward and the minus sign indicates a penalty. Plus, a corporation might pay highly efficient workers more money than ordinary employees. Plus, the manager of the plant might advance such workers to higher occupational positions. The same company might penalize workers that are frequently late or do poor quality work, by paying them less or firing them. Plus, a college will give high grades to students that do well in their academic work. The college will give poor grades to students that do not demonstrate adequate level of academic performance. Such students may be expelled from the college. Examples of informal rewards and penalties include the following. Plus, a worker will generally receive compliments and be liked by other employees if he or she is friendly and helpful to other employees. Plus, in the family, children might receive the praise of their parents if they are helpful and obedient. Children might be given a spanking if they are disobedient. There are, of course, many other possible examples. From the above examples, it may appear that reward structures are highly functional entities. This is often true. However, it is important to understand that the reward structure of the group can be partly or totally dysfunctional. This can happen under the following conditions. When functional behaviors are penalized or not rewarded, at least some dysfunction is likely to result. An example is when a student does high-quality creative work, and his or her instructor gives the student a low grade because the student strayed slightly from the curriculum. Another example is when an employee finds a more efficient and effective way of doing his or her job, but the supervisor criticizes the worker because the method the worker is using is different from the less efficient standard procedure. The reward structure can also be dysfunctional when neutral behaviors or other irrelevant factors are rewarded, such as paying employees who are poor workers more money because of seniority or paying superior workers less money because they have recently been hired. Reward structures can also penalize people for neutral qualities, such as a company that discriminates on the basis of race or sex. In such cases, superior workers may be paid less, or receive little opportunity for advancement because of discrimination based on irrelevant factors. Another example of dysfunction is seen when destructive behaviors are not penalized or when such behavior is rewarded. An example is when employee theft is not penalized. Still another example is when employees take excessively long lunch breaks, resulting in a failure to complete a reasonable amount of work. Thus, the above are factors that are usually, if not always, present in groups, as the concept was defined for this model. However, there are many factors and ideas that relate to groups that are not necessarily present in all groups. These factors and ideas are presented in the following list. One or more group leaders. According to Taylor's social psychology, all groups, even those that say they are leaderless, have some leadership structure. I believe a more accurate description is most groups have some leadership structure, but there may be some unusual groups that for all practical and theoretical purposes have no significant leadership structure. Large complex groups usually have many leaders, such as an organization. Even most friendship groups have one or more individual that tends to lead in certain respects, such as in conversation or in planning activities. However, there are groups that do not have a leader. Some friendship groups essentially have no leader. There are certain small work groups that have no leader either. But with most groups, even if there is no official leader, at least one individual intentionally or inadvertently takes the leadership role. Often in groups that have no official leader, there can be several people who take the leadership role at various points in time. This can relate to the situation that the group is dealing with at a specific point in time. For example, in a work group, the individual that is most knowledgeable about a specific task may lead the group while performing that task. When the group changes to a new task, it may unofficially change to a different leader, who is knowledgeable about the new task. From the above, it is apparent that there are several ways leaders can be categorized. First, there are formal and informal leaders, as already stated. Second, there are leaders that serve a general social function. This is called social leadership, and it involves various human relationship factors, such as the concern of emotional and interpersonal dynamics. In addition, there are leaders that deal with tasks and goals of the group. This is called task leadership. In many groups, but certainly not all groups, the task leader is a formal role, and the social leader is an informal role. Most formal groups, especially medium to large groups, had both formal and informal leaders. The assets owned by the group. This factor does not apply to all groups, because some groups do not own any assets. However, most major groups in our society own some assets, which can be machinery, tools, furniture, stocks, bonds, money, etc. This applies especially to organizations. Friendship groups usually do not own any assets. Of course, the individual members may own assets, but that is not the property of the group. Social facilitation. Under some conditions, people perform better in the presence of other individuals than they perform when alone, which is called social facilitation. There are many reasons for this phenomena. A general example is seen when certain individuals perform better when they are competing with others. Another general example is seen when individuals demonstrate better performance when being watched by others. It is more likely to happen when the individual is highly skilled and does not respond with a nervous reaction that interferes with performance. This can be the result of a skilled individual trying to demonstrate his or her skill to others, for the purpose of making a favorable impression on the observers. Thus, from the above, it becomes apparent that working in a group of some type can often result in better performance. However, just the opposite can also be true, under some conditions. This is discussed in the next item on this list. Social inhibition. Sometimes the presence of others can interfere with the performance of a task. A general example is when the individual is not especially skilled at the task and responds to being watched with a nervous reaction that interferes with the task. Another general example is when an individual is distracted by the people watching him or her, resulting in a loss of concentration on the task that the individual is trying to carry out. Social loafing. Sometimes when people perform in groups, the quality or quantity of work they do decreases as a result of social loafing. That is, they do not work as hard as they can, which is usually the result of not being observed. That is, social loafing is most likely to take place when the individual's work cannot be easily evaluated in a way that is separate from the group performance. For example, a group of people pushing a car does not allow anyone the awareness of how much force each person is putting into the task. Thus, there can be a tendency to reduce the effort each person puts into the task. The concept of social loafing should be a great value to managers who structure work activities. It is a good idea to structure tasks so the work put into them by each individual can easily be evaluated. If this is not done, there is a risk that social loafing will reduce work output. Patterns of group communications. There are many ways that people in a group communicate. One method is seen in the typical classroom, where the instructor does most of the talking. When the instructor leads a discussion, he or she generally asks the questions and decides which student will have the opportunity to answer the question. Another version is seen in certain discussion groups where each person has equal status, which allows anyone to speak or ask questions. Such groups are often arranged in a circle. These groups often have a group facilitator who does not lead or dominate the discussion. The facilitator's main job is to keep the conversation going without talking more than other group members. Some facilitators try to talk less than the other people in the group. Another type of group communications is seen in certain friendship groups, where one individual is the unofficial leader of the group. This pattern can involve everyone in the group communicating with the leader. Some of this communication might be done by phone from a group member to the leader, which can involve planning group activities. People in such a group will generally communicate most with the leader and less with other members of the group. There are, of course, almost an infinite number of patterns of group communications. In many groups, the pattern of communications changes with the circumstances the group is faced with at a particular point in time. Group cohesiveness. This concept relates to the forces that hold a group together. There are internal forces of attraction, such as liking other group members, enjoying group activities, being proud of the group, a positive sense of community that is held by the members of the group, taking pride in being a member of the group, and in general obtaining various rewards from the group. External forces can also partly or totally hold a group together. Two examples of external forces are a limited number of alternative groups that are available to the members, and the members of the group feel protected from unfriendly outsiders as long as they remain in the group. Thus, cohesiveness can maintain the group, and lack of cohesiveness can result in the group losing members and it may ultimately fall apart. Lack of group cohesiveness is essentially the opposite of the above. The members may not like each other, there may be hostile internal conflict, the group may fail to satisfy the needs of its members, and there may be more interesting and attractive groups that are available to the members. Competition. There are two types of competition that relate to some groups, which are internal and external competition. One type of competition is between group members. This is internal competition. The other type is competition with outsiders and other groups, which is external competition. Competition can be openly recognized by the group and its members. Two examples of openly recognized competition are an election for a group leader or when a small business competes against similar companies for customers. However, sometimes competition in groups is not openly recognized, such as when people compete to speak in a group, or when people compete for informal leadership in the group. A good example of competition within a group is seen in competitive colleges when the instructor marks the students on a graph. The grade an individual student obtains is determined by his or her performance as compared to the performance of other students. An example of external group competition can also be seen in competitive colleges that try to compete with other colleges to obtain the best students. Of course, there are some groups that for all practical purposes do not have any significant internal or external competition. This might include certain friendship groups, but certainly not all such groups. That is, there can be some competition even in a group of friends, in relation to who talks more or who will take the informal leadership role. Problem solving in groups and related ideas. Often people try to solve problems in groups. This potentially offers certain advantages when compared to problem solving alone, without any help from others. For example, there is the combined judgment and experience of all the group members. If one individual is not knowledgeable or just not sure about something, he or she can rely on the knowledge or expertise of other group members. Thus, from the above it would appear that problem solving in groups is highly functional, and under certain psychological, social, and cultural conditions it certainly is. However, under some conditions problem solving in groups can be highly dysfunctional or can lead to dysfunctional actions. There are many reasons for this, which are discussed in the following paragraphs. In Taylor's Social Psychology and similar books, a number of dysfunctions are delineated in terms of definitions, such as groupthink and risky shift. The first term is defined in Taylor's Social Psychology as groupthink, the impairment in decision-making and sound judgment that can occur in highly cohesive groups. Group members ignore contradictory information, ostracize dissenters, and unify around their decision even if it is irrational. Risky shift is defined in the same glossary as risky shift. After taking part in a group discussion of an issue, people are sometimes willing to support riskier decisions than they were before the group discussion. This is part of a more general process of group polarization, which can lead either to riskier or more cautious decisions, depending on the initial views of group members. These definitions by themselves do not really explain the dynamics of group dysfunction in relation to problem solving. I will explain some of the factors that can be the primary causes of failure to solve problems in groups in the following paragraphs. I am not initially delineating the difficulties groups have with problem solving and decision making in terms of groupthink or risky shift, but I will return to these concepts as I develop my thesis. Note: problem solving also includes decision making in this text and vice versa. One of the primary dysfunctions in problem solving is probably related to the tendency to follow the most prestigious and/or powerful members of the group. That is, there is a tendency to go along with and obey the higher status people in a group. This becomes highly dysfunctional when one or two prestigious or powerful group members makes a poor decision, which can be accepted and reinforced by the other members of the group. Members with less status in the group may be severely criticized or expelled from the group if they disagree with the higher status people in the group. Keep in mind that often the highest status person in a group is the boss, who has the power to advance other group members or fire them. In fact, group norms often informally or even formally prohibit disagreement with the boss or other high-status individuals. Many of us learn from childhood and personal experience that if you disagree with authority, you may be officially or unofficially punished. We learn that it is safer to agree with the more powerful and prestigious people in our environment. Many of us also learn that such agreement is proper behavior. Another dysfunction of group problem solving and decision making is related to the idea expressed in the above paragraph. Members with less prestige and power are likely to be partly or totally ignored in group problem solving and decision making. This is especially true in very large groups. Even if the lower status person manages to express his or her ideas to the group, there is a fairly high probability that his or her ideas will be judged as unrealistic or not useful. This can happen even if the ideas are of high quality and potentially quite useful. One of the reasons it is easy for high-status group members to overlook good ideas of lower-status members is related to the fact that good ideas must be developed and implemented. This involves effort, time, and usually an investment of money. It also usually involves some risk and experimentation. Thus, it is easy for the high-status group members to focus on the above and declare that the idea is simply not feasible. Of course, it is most likely that if the same idea was proposed by a high-status member of the group, such as the boss, the other members will assume that effort, time, and money must be invested to implement the idea. The group members will also assume that some experimentation and risks must be taken to implement the ideas that are proposed by high-status members. The concept of group polarization and the more specific idea of risky shift can be applied to the dynamics described in the two preceding paragraphs. If the higher status individuals in the group appear to be inclined to take riskier courses of action, after a group discussion the entire group may agree or believe that a riskier course of action is sensible and justifiable. Even if some lower status members disagree, they will probably not voice their opinion. If they do initially, they will most likely be criticized for their position, which will probably lead them to agree with the higher status group members. This is polarization toward a riskier course of action, which is risky shift. Essentially, the same dynamics will most likely happen if the higher status group members are leaning toward a more conservative and less risky course of action. That is, if the boss and similar high status individuals in the group are thinking of more conservative and safer plans, the other members will most likely agree after a group discussion. This is group polarization toward a more conservative position. Probably, in most cases, if a lower status person is suggesting a riskier or more conservative course of action, he or she will not be taken very seriously by the other group members. Another factor that sometimes interferes with group problem solving is the norms of the group. Groups often have established ways of thinking and solving problems. There are certain methods that the group does not use because they may not know how to use them or they violate the tradition and/or values of the group. Thus, groups often have established ways of doing things, which can interfere with problem solving. Another factor that can sometimes interfere with problem solving in groups is the level of cohesiveness. Under some psychological, social and cultural conditions, a high level of group cohesiveness can actually interfere with good problem solving. This is most likely to happen when the individuals have an unstated rule of agreeing with the group leader and other high status people in the group. A lack of group cohesiveness can also probably cause difficulties with problem solving under certain psychological, social and cultural conditions. For example, if the lack of group cohesiveness results in one or more of the following, major difficulties in problem solving can result. Difficulties in communications. Hostile reactions from group members. A unwillingness to invest the time and effort needed for problem solving. A general lack of interest in the group. Most of what was discussed to this point can be used to explain the dynamics behind some groupthink situations. If the higher status group members are supporting a specific view and ignoring certain negative factors, the other members will do the same, and will most likely reinforce the thinking of the higher status members. Groupthink is most likely to happen in groups that have strong leaders. Other factors expressed in Taylor's social psychology include the following. A highly cohesive group of decision makers. The group members might want to maintain the high level of cohesion by agreeing with each other. Agreeing with the leader and other high status group members may be especially important to the members of the group. Insulation of the group from outside influence. A insulated group does not have to be particularly concerned about the opinion or disagreement of outsiders. The outsiders have no power, as far as the group members are concerned. In addition, outsiders may not even know about the group and its decisions. A directive leader. A strong leader that directs the other members of the group, conveys to the other group members that the leader is giving orders or simply will not tolerate any significant disagreement. In such situations, both the leader and his loyal followers may interpret disagreement as insubordination or as a destructive, hostile response. The individual that is disagreeing or questioning the leader's ideas may be considered a threat to the group. Thus, if he or she continues to question the leader's statement, he or she may be expelled from the group. Lack of procedures to ensure careful consideration of the pros and cons of alternative actions. If a serious consideration of the pros and cons of alternative actions are considered, it can interfere with the perspective of the strong directive leader. It can also result in disagreement and conflict. Thus, in groups that are vulnerable to groupthink, norms may have developed that prohibit serious consideration of alternative ideas and actions. High stress from external threats with little hope of finding a better solution than that favored by the leader. People often go along with poor solutions to a problem because there appears to be no choice. When there is stress from external sources, especially if time limitations are involved, it is even easier to accept the solution of the leader, because failure to do so can be more threatening. Question: What is brainstorming? Brainstorming is a common problem-solving technique that is used by groups of various types. The technique involves the organizing of a group of people who suggest various ideas to solve a problem. Each idea that a group member gets is voiced to the group. There is one individual that writes the ideas on a blackboard, so all the members can see the ideas that have been suggested. Group members are allowed to create modifications and combinations of the ideas that have already been suggested. All ideas are accepted, excluding ideas that are essentially duplications of suggestions that were already voiced. When there is an adequate list of suggestions, the group meeting is terminated. The list of ideas are evaluated by a different group, or the same group at a different point in time. During the evaluation, impractical ideas are removed from the list. The remainders of the ideas are further evaluated. The best ideas are selected and developed further, so they can be used to solve the problem in a realistic and practical way. Question: Is brainstorming an effective technique? Some studies have indicated that brainstorming is not the most effective technique of problem solving. People working alone can often come up with more solutions to a problem than people working in brainstorming groups. The reasons for the relative inefficiency of brainstorming include the following: the interfering effects of other group members. There can be many factors that interfere with concentration when a person is in a group. People in groups usually focus some of their attention on the other group members, which can be distracting under some conditions. The remainder of the items on this list can also be classified as the interfering effects of other group members. Only one person can talk at a time. When a person in a brainstorming group comes up with an idea, there is a waiting period before the idea can be verbalized to the group. The reason for this is obvious: two or more people cannot talk in a group simultaneously. During the waiting period, the individual must keep the idea he or she created in memory, which may interfere with the development of a new idea during this waiting period. While other people are talking, it is also possible that some ideas will be forgotten. The distracting effect of listening to other people while trying to come up with creative ideas. Listening to other people can cause some individuals to forget their own creative ideas. Listening to other people may also interfere with the individual's ability to think. In theory, the opposite is supposed to be the case. That is, the ideas that are verbalized in a brainstorming group are supposed to stimulate the creative thinking of all the members. If this happens, its benefit may be offset by the distracting effect of listening to others. People in brainstorming groups may not voice their ideas because they may be embarrassed to do so, or they may be concerned about criticism. In theory, a member of a brainstorming group can say any idea that he or she gets. Criticism is not allowed during a brainstorming session. However, in a real situation, people may be critical. The criticism may not be voiced, but people are aware that others are listening and evaluating. The above is probably most likely to affect low-status members of the group. Ideas produced by lower-status members of the brainstorming group may be favored over the ideas of the lower-status members. This factor is probably present in most groups, as explained earlier in the text. In brainstorming groups, people have no time to develop and refine their ideas to develop good ideas. Even if they are tentative, it takes a considerable amount of time. This is especially true with more complicated ideas that are useful in the real world. When people work alone, they have the time to think. Keep in mind that 1 hour in a brainstorming session does not mean the person has 1 hour to think. Most of the time will be consumed in waiting to talk or listening to ideas of other group members. Question: Do brainstorming groups serve any function? The studies do not indicate that brainstorming groups do not work at all. The scientific evidence suggests that individuals working alone can do better than the same number of individuals in a brainstorming group. Thus, such groups can often come up with useful ideas at a less efficient level than individuals working separately. However, brainstorming groups may serve a social psychological function in some cases, besides the creation of new ideas. That is, When a group or organization is faced with a problem, people gathering together in a brainstorming session might be emotionally reassuring in some cases. The brainstorming group may have the effect, in some cases, of reducing worry and anxiety. A modification of the brainstorming group might make it more effective. Instead of having each person gather in a conventional face-to-face group, the members can work alone on a computer network that permits all members to see each other's suggestions on a computer screen. It is important that the sources of the ideas are concealed. This type of electronic group does not need time limitations, because people can type their ideas into the computer system at any point in time. When there are enough good ideas, the material can be turned over to a committee to select the best ideas and develop them so they can be used in an effective and realistic way. This is essentially what is done with most brainstorming groups. A simpler version of the above method can be done without computers. Just have individuals working alone, who periodically place their ideas anonymously in a suggestion box. Periodically, all the ideas are typed and distributed to the other group members, which is done to stimulate the creative thinking process of all the members. When there are enough good ideas, just as with the above, the material is turned over to a committee to choose the best ideas and develop them so they can be useful. Question: how can some of the dysfunctions found in group decision-making be reduced or eliminated? All of the following may help to reduce the difficulties. The group leader should initially act as a facilitator, encouraging other members to voice their opinions, ideas, and questions. Encourage all the group members to present their ideas and give their opinion. Encourage outsiders, especially impartial experts, to participate in the group, giving their opinions, criticisms, and ideas. Divide the group into two or more committees to determine a significant issue. Then, after each committee has come to an independent decision about the issue, they can meet to work out differences, with the goal of obtaining a mutually acceptable course of action. Have one group member assigned the role of a devil's advocate to challenge the ideas of the group. All of the above can probably reduce some of the dysfunctions found in group problem solving and decision making. However, it does not totally solve the problem I suggested in the beginning of this paper. That is, human beings have a learned tendency to follow the leader and other high-status people in the groups they interact in. The solution to this difficulty can be solved with the following 5-step method. 1. Ask the group members to work on a specific problem or issue independently. 2. Tell each member to gather his or her own information. 3. Have each group member write down his or her thoughts, disagreements, questions, and opinions, in a way that is totally anonymous. The material should be typed to prevent recognition of the contributor from handwriting. 4. The written material is sent to the group anonymously, such as through the mail without a return address. 5. The anonymously written material is then evaluated by the group. Ideally, a second group should do the evaluation and the final decision-making. This can eliminate the problem of favoring the ideas of high-status people over other group members, because nobody will know who submitted the information.